It's the illustrious from high above Wyoming mainstream media. Joined by Mr. Misdemeanor himself, the Saratoga Sledgehammer. Starting your day the right way on the Independence Network. It's time for the morning show with your hosts, David Iverson and Jailbird Joey.
It's time once again for the morning show on the Independence Network. I'm David Iverson from Cowboy State Politics, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, my partner in crime, Joey Correnti from Just Blame Joey. How's it going this morning, Joey?
Not too bad at all. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed here in the studio, and do a little update before we get started on something we talked about yesterday, the Girl Scout out of Pinedale that was fined $400 for selling cookies out of Grandma and Grandpa's front yard. I did contact the family, and they kind of want to just let it lie. In the end, all the cookies were sold. The young lady is going to be able to go to camp, but a message from her mother stated, "I don't want my daughter to do any more interviews or have her picture posted anymore. I wasn't really thrilled with the Cowboy State article." That would be Cowboy State Daily, not Cowboy State Politics. And we are ready to just let it lie. This was not about the money. It was about code enforcement officers and lack of professionalism and abuse of power. So for now, we are done as all the cookies are sold and she is all set to go to camp. So thanks for all the responses. Got a ton of emails yesterday. How can we help out? The families asked for a little space and to just let it go. So I'm going to respect that. I hope you will too. We'll continue to look for opportunities to solve Wyoming problems the Wyoming way in the future. But another satisfied customer of the cow pie. We did a story on your daughter, and it looked like it pointed out, you know, some of the things we talked about, the inequities and the way the law was being applied. But yeah, just another person not thrilled at all with the way the cow pie wrote up their family and their story. So we're just going to go ahead and let them have the privacy and space they asked for and move on to other things.
Yeah, that's too bad, man. I was looking forward to a whole case of cookies that I could dole out at, you know, for different events. That's Girl Scout cookies. I have to tell you, Joey, there are few things that are better than those. Thin Mints, they're absolutely incredible. So anyway, we'll definitely give that family the privacy that they've asked for. It's really a crappy deal how they were treated down there in Pinedale. And, you know, the article in the Cow Pie doesn't sound to me like the family was all that thrilled. And, you know, like you say, we ought to just respect their privacy.
Yeah, and we're going to go ahead and do that. Moving on to other things, up in your neck of the woods, looks like you're going to have a brand new, what is it, events complex or something? The school board's looking to get into the real estate market and generate revenue for the city of Sheridan.
You know, isn't that always the line with all of these groups? We can generate this amount of money. Now, I will admit, there's kind of a lack of places across the state to have big meetings. I mean, you and I have been involved with the Republican Party for quite some time, and we're well aware of the lack of meeting space in different parts of the state. You know, many communities don't have a community center or a rec center or anything like that to where you can hold a big meeting. But Sheridan is not one of those. In fact, there are several private places where you could hold a meeting. And now you have the Sheridan, I think it's Sheridan School District number 2. No, it's number 1. Well, anyway. Anyway, they want to build an event center, and they want a gigantic amount of money from the city and county to do this, and it's to the tune of $27 million. And they're requesting, according to the Sheridan Media, they're requesting $17 million from the city to help fund the project. Now, before we get into, you know, whether the school district needs to be involved in so-called economic development, Let's just talk about how they got this property. It was donated to the school district by the Scott family. Scott family in Sheridan and Buffalo, they're mega bucks, millionaires, and they just gave a big chunk of property to the school, which is up around, where the high school is, the fairgrounds and all of that. And it's pretty, it's totally undeveloped. And so now the school district is saying they want to build a community center under the guise of, well, look at all of the revenue it's going to generate, all the meetings that can take place here, and we're going to have an indoor track, and we can use it, and it's going to be fantastic. And we only want $17 million from the city to do it. What do you think about that, Joey?
Well, all I hear is we want $17 million up front, and it's going to be owned by the school district, who already collects taxes through mills. There's no way the city has any say in that. And I believe there's a couple of specific purpose taxes in Sheridan. So one penny here, one penny there. They have no other resource to generate this revenue. And the money they want up front, it would take them years to even break even on what they're asking from the taxpayer to get this thing going. And once again, it puts, the government and now a school district in competition with private business. Is it nice to have amenities? Sure. Is it the government's responsibility to make sure that those amenities are there and taxpayer funded, and regardless of how well or poorly they perform, they're constantly being paid for by the taxpayer? And like we said yesterday, not even maintained if built properly, no fire suppression system and deferred maintenance for 25 years or whatever it is. It's just a bad deal all around. And I don't know why the school district is looking at, and maybe it was part of the deal when they were gifted the land, they weren't allowed to sell it. Sometimes that's part of it, but that doesn't mean you have to use taxpayer dollars to develop this to stay in competition with private business in an area that already, like you said, has a lot of these amenities. And I don't see the long-term plan in any of this on how this is going to run in a self-sufficient manner and be an actual bonus, offsetting the drag and the cost to the taxpayer. I just see, hey, look at all this cool stuff. If we run it at $135 per person per event as an estimate, these kinds of events will bring in this kind of money. And I'm starting to wonder about what they're going to charge for facility use, because they're saying here on, if you click on the story, there's a little breakout map or side article, the proposed home of the Sheridan Event Center page. And it looks like if you have a one-day concert with 100 participants, they're projecting the spending impacts, the money they'll bring in is about $37,000. I don't know if that includes the facility fee, but all the way down to a seven-day motorcycle rally, which I've never heard of in my life, could bring in up to $7.9 million, which would be a tax benefit to the city of Sheridan of about $475,000. That's all great, but I don't know how you're actually going to get there. And what are you charging for people to use this? If the price is too high, you're going to have a really nice facility that everybody's going to drive by and never utilize. And those projected revenues are never going to come in.
Well, all of the numbers on this spreadsheet are, I have no idea how they're getting to them. And I'll tell you exactly what this thing reminds me of is the tax in Johnson County that they wanted for 20 years to build all of these buildings at taxpayer expense. And, the original article, and if you got to listen to the sound bites from the superintendent of schools, Scott Stultz. By the way, we should talk about who this guy is. He's the one who, during COVID, demanded that everybody wear masks. There was a giant school board meeting, and the whole point of the meeting was, we don't want masks in schools. And there was lots of doctors that testified at that school board meeting that said, no, masks are actually harmful. There was a couple of professors from Sheridan College that got up and spoke very eloquently about it. And it was Scott Stultz who stood up and said, yeah, we hear everything you're saying, but we're still doing masks. It was also Scott Stultz who pretty much said he was absolutely in favor of all the porn books in the library at a school board meeting. And now he's the guy that's that's pitching business development to the city of Sheridan. The problem is, like you say, Joey, there's no guarantee that any of these dollar figures are ever going to materialize. A couple of years ago, when Johnson County tried to pass that tax that I was so involved in, there were spreadsheets just like this one that said, well, you know, if we charge this amount of money for this amount of people, we're going to generate all of this. And in truth, when you got down to brass taxes, it was, you know, special interests getting what they want via taxpayer dollars. And if you listen to the sound bites from Scott Stultz that are on Sheridan Media, he's talking about all of the things that the school can use it for. He goes into great detail about how we've got a lot of indoor events, activities that the school has, indoor track, for example. And we can use that all year long. So really what this is an attempt by the school to hijack more taxpayer dollars over and above what they get from all of the mill levies and to have this fantastic building that they can do whatever they want with it, all of which will be done on the backs of Sheridan taxpayers. This thing is absolutely outrageous. And, you know, again, he's got motorcycle rally listed on here. Last time I checked, Joey, motorcycle rallies don't usually happen inside. I mean, I don't know how many you've been to, but it's kind of difficult to get a whole bunch of motorcycles inside a building, and you probably don't want any activities that's going to happen at a motorcycle rally happening inside your $27 million structure. Something about burnouts and motorcycle races and all of that. So, I mean, I think that this whole thing is just another pie in the sky, give us more money endeavor. And I don't see how they're going to get any of this cash, unless, of course, the Sheridan City Council just does what they always do, which is spend taxpayer money on ridiculous projects.
Well, I know there will be two votes on the Sheridan City Council against that, but I don't think that it'll stop them from going through. I would not be surprised to see another one penny tax or special purpose tax on the ballot in Sheridan coming up soon based on this idea. And one of the other problems I have with it is they're pitching it right now before a presidential election based on all of the inflation rates, current material and working costs, labor, all that stuff. When they could just hold back and say, hey, worst case scenario, we still have Joe Biden. These numbers don't change that much. But if Donald Trump is president in November, rebid the project in January and see if we can't get a better deal and bring that down a few million dollars once America starts to right itself again. You said something about motorcycle rallies indoors. Unless it's the Astrodome, yeah, I don't see it happening. This is only projected to be about a 60,000 square foot indoor area. And yeah, that would be tight right turns if you're... if you've got crowds plus the entire motorcycle rally indoors, a little safety concern there. But just because we know it's a bad idea and we can talk about it all day and how it's unnecessary and not a proper use of, you know, government or authority or taxpayer money, doesn't mean they won't get it done. The Sheridan City Council, like you said, has been notorious for spending money on things like Goose Creek Transit and the Hub, which they have no right, you know, there's no legitimate purpose for taxpayer money going to those places. And this one will probably be even easier for them because it's attached to land that the school district already owns. And yeah, I just see this as a huge debacle. And my heart goes out to the taxpayers in Sheridan County because it's probably going to happen eventually one way or another.
I got to tell you, Joey, I'm feeling a bit like Michael Corleone on The Godfather. You know, I try to get out and then they pull me back in. I get away from one tax and spend county and move to another one where I've got to work on yet another tax. But I think, a more interesting discussion is government competition with private business. And we talk about that a lot on the Independence Network, because in Wyoming, it's almost like the pandemic of government spending. You know, the lovely Christine and I are about to get married, and so we know full well how many event centers there are and how much it costs to rent one. And, you know, Joey, you and I have been involved in the Republican Party for several years, and so we know what goes into choosing a venue for our state meetings. But there's a lot of, you know, private buildings that are, it's private enterprise, no taxpayer dollars, and they're absolutely trying to, you know, make it float. And, you know, take for example, well, just look at our party, our launch party that we did for the Independence Network. How many different venues did we look at, and what were the prices of all of those? So one really great venue in Sheridan is the Sheridan Inn. And I can't remember how many thousands of dollars they wanted to rent that room for one night, but it was a huge chunk of change. And it's a really nice venue. There's the Ramada, which is also private. And I'm not saying the Ramada is that great of a venue, but they do have a conference center. And we did have the Republican convention there a couple years ago. But there's venues all over Sheridan that are privately run, that they are privately funded, and now we're going to have one that's publicly owned that's in competition with all of those. So what do you suppose the chances are, Joey, that the price to rent this whole event center is going to be lower than it would be for any of these private venues? Do you suppose that might be coming?
For you and me, your wedding, for the Republican Party, no, I don't think it will be lower at all. I think the only way that you're going to get a lower price, and they may even advertise it as this, and we've seen in the past that this is quite often what happens with public facilities, is the only people that are going to get a discount is the discount drag shows that you know they're going to have there at the taxpayer's expense.
Oh, can you imagine? The rest of us,
oh. Yeah.
You know,
if you apply the principle and the argument you hear all over the place about public employees and how we have to stay in competition with the, you know, the private market and this, that, and the other, there's two things that could happen. Either this event complex goes up and they do have massive discounted rates, and then they're killing other businesses, which is bad, or they use that argument and say, no, we're gonna have to be comparable to the marketplace, and it's going to be exorbitant. The Sheridan Inn that you talked about, for one night, we were quoted a minimum of $4,500 up to $10,000 for one night. And that's, sorry, I'm not sorry, way too much for us and for most people, especially when you can only capacitate between 150 and 300 people, depending on the room setup. So no, I don't see this as being an easier access for, you know, organizations, public groups, private groups, individuals, anybody other than the woke groups they were going to want to promote through the school district. So you're going to see a lot of drag queen story hours at, you know, $5 a day. But the rest of us, yeah, we'll be paying through the nose.
Well, another aspect of this too, and again, this one happens statewide, is how many counties have a recreation district? How many counties installed a tax with under the auspices of, we're going to build a rec center? There's a lot of them, and one of them in particular that I know of happened in Johnson County. Years ago, there was this whole plan to create something just like this whole community center or whatever they're calling it in Sheridan. We're going to have a rec center, and it's going to have a gym, and we're going to be able to work out there, and we'll build a pool, and it's going to be fantastic. Well, the rec center never got built. But we still have the recreation district that is taxing people. And so what happens is you tax people, and under the auspices of building a building that never materializes. So a couple of questions for Scott Stultz and the city of Sheridan and the school district. Where's the money for the recreation district? Where is it going? What exactly have you built with all of those taxpayer dollars? This is just another attempt, in my opinion, to have a special interest, build some giant building so that it can be used. I mean, it's another pet project, pork barrel spending, whatever, however you want to label it. But for crying out loud, man, like, people are taxed enough. And I understand that you've got some fantastic plans and it's going to be a beautiful building. But how much do you actually want to tax people? I mean, really? I mean, I don't know how many mills are assessed in every county, but it's a lot, and a lot of them go to the school district. We're paying $20,000 per student across the state. And in Sheridan County, I love this statistic, Joey. For the amount of money that we're paying the school district, you could fire two superintendents, because right now Sheridan has three school districts. You could fire two superintendents and their staff, hire one at $300,000 a year, and you would still save money. So there is a tremendous amount of taxpayer dollars that is being funneled into Sheridan County through the school district. And again, we go back to student outcomes. You know, the student outcomes in Wyoming, across the state, Sheridan is included in that, they're a little bit better than mediocre. So they're already getting a ton of our money. And now we want to build a fantastic community center, but we need more taxpayer money to do it. It's just absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, and if we went with your little scenario there and got rid of some superintendents and hired one at $300,000, that one superintendent would still be making triple what the state superintendent of public education makes, but at least it would be less than they're spending now. There's another interesting aspect of that. Who are they going to get to manage this? It's going to be another school district administration post at hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Somebody who runs this, because it's owned by the school district, they're going to have a facilities manager, a superintendent of special events, or whatever they're going to call it, special little name there. So there's embedded costs in this that I don't even see being discussed. And I'm going to go back to something I point out pretty regularly. If certain people in Sheridan want this so badly, crack open your checkbook. Start a GoFundMe. You can go ahead and, if you really care about people having the amenity and you want to be, you know, a good citizen, don't say, yeah, we need this, we have to have this. And regardless of your current financial situation, if you live within the city limits of Sheridan, you're going to pay for it. Hey, start fundraising. At least do a public match. And then we'll get the Sheridan City Council to fund it at, you know, $300. Okay, we'll match it. But the people that seem to want things so badly have the least amount of skin in the game. They go and they throw taxpayers into the wood chipper and say, you know, we're going to find a way to get blood out of this rock. And I never see a personal check cut on any of these good ideas that people have. And I even had a conversation with Kurt Meyer a little while ago. I said, have you ever received a check? And can we see if there is any private funding of any of these state agencies that people complain about? We need to do this, we need to do that. Mental health, have you received any money for the 988 hotline? He's like, nope. The only thing I ever received personal checks for that say go to this department is the state fair. So it's on you, people. You really want this, Nick Stahl or whatever your name is, get out there, start, you know, shearing your sheep, as it were, and you know, get this thing paid for yourself. You got the money, fine, do it with your own funds.
A perfect example of that is also in Sheridan. Several years ago, there was a bunch of people who wanted a hockey rink. And it just so happens that there's a gajillionaire. He's now passed away, but there's a gajillionaire that used to live in Sheridan that made candy bars. His last name was Mars. And he was a fan of hockey, too. And now there's a gigantic building in Sheridan with a couple of M&Ms on the side of it. And it was privately funded. It's called the Mars Center. It's a big hockey rink. So there's no reason why you can't find some private people to build a convention center if you put your if you put enough effort into it. The reason why that all of these people always go to the taxpayers first is it's easier. It's easier for them to say, well, you know, it's just one more penny. One penny is not going to hurt a thing. And the truth is, it's not one penny. It ends up being a giant increase in your sales tax. So, for example, in Sheridan, I think the sales tax is 6%. So if you go to 7%, one penny, whatever that is, that's a little bit less than a 20% increase on your sales taxes. So it's not one penny. And if you add it up for however many years they're going to propose this, it's going to end up being a gigantic amount of money, all of it on the backs of taxpayers. And I didn't think that this thing was going to get me this fired up, Joey. But now I'm having visions of the sales tax in Johnson County. And here's my other objection to this whole thing, because we know how it's going to go. A sales tax is the most regressive tax there is, because it affects those people of lower incomes proportionately more than it does other people. You know, if you're making $100,000 a year and you have to pay an additional 1% sales tax when you go to the store, okay, it's probably not going to affect you a whole heck of a lot. But if you're the person that's making 10 bucks an hour or 15 bucks an hour, and when you go to the store, $5 ends up being a lot of money for you. And there's a lot of those people that work hard every single day, work for fast food joints, restaurants. That 1% tax ends up being a pretty good proportion of their income. So if this ends up being a sales tax, it's going to be paid for on the backs of people who can least afford it. I mean, any way that you look at this thing, I'm opposed to it. If the school district wants to spend $27 million of their own money, of our money, which we're already taxed for, that's how they should do it. By the way, I think that they get way too much money anyway, but absolutely not. We should not tax our citizens for any other pet projects. And frankly, I find this whole thing offensive.
Yeah, well, we're going to go ahead and let David pop an Ambien, calm down a little bit. It's obvious this is a bad idea across the board. And right now we're just talking about the money to set it up. I'm really concerned about the 1% you guys are going to be paying in perpetuity for the bond, for the construction, and then all of the management costs in the future. They're always going to come back to the table. It's going to cost more and more and more in the future because it's not. That's the one thing you get with a privately funded thing is you don't have to pay for the upkeep, maintenance, and operation in the future. It's private. It all has to go through the business. So, yeah, we'll let David take a breather for a second. Looking at a couple other stories popping up here real quick. I don't even think we're going to talk about this much, but Frontier Republican founder Joe McGinley and his Everest quest have been blocked by China, but he plans to head up the mountain through Nepal. So, yeah, Joe McGinley once again trying to climb Mount Everest. And now China's saying, nope, we're not letting any foreigners into the country. Personally, I believe once they find out it's Comrade McGinley, they'll be like, oh, wait a minute, let's send the limos. That's our boy right there. And they'll usher him right in. But it looks like another, temporarily failed attempt of Joe McGinley to do what he said he wants to do. And it turns out the way it always does, he climbs halfway up a mountain and then turns around and walks away, just like he did with his county party in the 2020 Republican Party convention. This goes back to more taxpayer funding. This guy's entire business and that ridiculous building he now owns in downtown Casper, that's all taxpayer funded. That's all through partnerships with University of Wyoming, Wyoming Business Council, or Wyoming Business whatever, grants and loans, and that's how it works. We spend tax dollars so they can put up something pretty that they say everybody wants and needs and likes. And then they take that money and they go to, foreign countries and try to climb mountains. Let me see what else we got here.
I'm all in favor of Joe McGinley climbing mountains. I think the more time he spends, in other places, that's less time that we have to put up with him. I say he should just seek out every mountain on the face of the globe and go climb it and leave us the heck alone.
Yeah, the beauty of this little debacle is even in his own statement, he will be out of the country and out of the state of Wyoming until at least mid-May when he makes his second attempt up the other side of the mountain. So, yay, 30-day break from Joe McGinley. There it is. There's the number. McGinley Orthopedics in the old Wells Fargo building charging up to $12,000 a night for renting the event space. So
wait,
back to the story we
event
just did.
Center?
Well, yeah, that's another amenity they provide there at the taxpayer-funded McGinley Orthopedics. And that money doesn't go back to the taxpayer. It goes into the business account. They can spend it any way they want, apparently on plane tickets to Nepal. And it's all over the place. We need to get government out of subsidizing private business and competing with private business. And yeah, we're just going to leave that one there. Oh, what else you got on? I know you had a stack of stuff there this morning,
okay,
David.
So there's another one, and I'm not exactly clear on, the specifics on this one, but there's an article in the Cowpie. It's entitled Wyoming GOP Blasts Wilderness Bill Supported by Hageman, Barrasso, and Lummis. And during the convention last weekend, there was a straw poll that was taken on whether or not we should open up wilderness wilderness areas for development. And let me just quote from the article for a little bit. Quote, an act of Congress would be the only way these lands could return to multiple use management. Now, we're talking about wilderness areas. So, for example, in the Bighorns, the Cloud Peak Wilderness. And just to give you a quick rundown, there's no motorized travel. There's no development whatsoever in wilderness areas. You can't take a four-wheeler or a motorcycle up there. It has to be all on either horseback, foot, or you could take a bicycle up there. But they're completely closed off from development. Well, this apparently, this act is going to open up wilderness areas for development. So oil and gas, those sorts of things. So from the article, currently, Wyoming has hundreds of thousands of acres of wilderness study areas that are strictly off limits to any multiple use, Barrasso said in a statement to the Cowpie. The federal government effectively manages them as wilderness with no range improvements for grazing, no off-road use, no energy or mineral development allowed. These draconian land use lockdowns have been in place for, in some cases, over 30 years. The Wyoming Public Lands Initiative Act of 2023 would implement the recommendations made by the Wyoming County Commissioners Association. So we're already going south here. As a result of the WPLI process by, one, releasing about 130,000 acres of wilderness areas back into multiple use management, designating about 100,000 acres as recreation, there's the problem, and other less restrictive management areas, and designating about 15,000 acres as wilderness. Former state legislator Marty Halverson initiated a straw poll Wednesday. Halverson describes the federal legislation as an additional, quote, an additional theft of Wyoming land because of the 15,000 acres permanently designated for wilderness and the fact that no land under the bill is completely removed from wilderness status. And here's Marty again. It's just another attempt to make the sovereign state of Wyoming smaller, she told the Cowboy State Daily. It changes the state's boundaries. So from what I gather on this, is the bill wants to open up these wilderness areas for multiple land use. And this has been an effort across the United States, and it mostly affects the West. So Wyoming, Montana, parts of Colorado, anywhere where there's a lot of federal land. And if you're unfamiliar, our pal Marty Halverson is famous for, she's actually got a pin that she wears around, and it shows exactly how much of the state of Wyoming is owned and operated by the state of Wyoming. And it really ends up being about half the state. The other half of the state is BLM, Forest Service, managed by the federal government. So really, half the state of Wyoming is controlled by the federal government. And Marty is saying that this attempt to open up these wilderness areas for recreation, that's the key word here, is another land grab by the federal government. So the effort that's been afoot in, you know, special interest groups, lobbying organizations, is to allow quote-unquote recreation groups to lease federal land. And so we're not talking about your local, horseback riding association or your local, you know, dirt bike association that wants to use federal land for their purposes. We're talking about groups like the Sierra Club leasing federal land, and the result of which would be to close off all of that land from things like grazing, hunting and fishing, everything that we would consider to be recreation. So there really is an effort afoot in the U.S. to close off federal lands from human development but via leasing it by so-called conservation and recreation groups like the Sierra Club.
And what I see the problem is, and of course I was at the convention, and what I gathered from the resolution that we took a straw poll on was, this isn't saying that the federal government shouldn't be managing federal lands. There's that argument in there that those federal lands should be state lands, and goes into the compact we had when we got statehood and all that stuff. But it's not just that they're planning on developing a program that will lease federal lands for public use to private organizations like the Sierra Club. It's that it also includes state lands that are managed by the federal government. Now, let me tell you kind of how I see how that happens. You have a wide range of state lands that have things like sage grouse that the federal government manages because they're worried that an animal that we provide hunting tags for is actually endangered. I don't get it. That's not the conversation. But the federal government gets to manage those lands because they're considered sage grouse habitats, wilderness areas, even though it's state land. So it's not just a federal land, it's Wyoming state land, where Wyoming should be able to say, as a sovereign state, this is what we're going to do with this land. But no, with this, the federal government could come in and not only regulate the state land, but expand those wilderness areas based on, nope, you got spotted owl over here. No, you've got around Daniel, you've got endangered wolf species right behind this bar over here. And we're going to manage that land in lieu of the state having any say in it. And then we're going to lease it to people like Bill Gates and the Sierra Club, who are going to choose to not allow anybody to do anything on that land. So you're right. It is effectively the Rock Springs BLM management plan on a different level, generating revenue that only goes to the federal government by, I don't know, asserting some authority over Wyoming state lands just because of what's perceived to be on it. So the answer to this is what Marty always says is, hey, when Wyoming became a state, we didn't become a state. We only became half a state because at least 48% of the land is owned and managed by the federal government. And that's the fight we really need to have. But every step forward we take in that fight, we get more plans like this where, oh, here's a Band-Aid. We're going to make it a little better for now. And I get the intent. We're going to open it up for recreation, but that won't be the result. But we also have to look at the difference between, you know, federal and state. And our DC congregation can only do what they can do. And I wish they would stop focusing on making it a little more palatable for now and say, no, no, no. There's only 12 states that haven't gotten the land that the federal government owns back. And they're mostly Western states. We need to do for one what we've done for all. And if you look at that map on Marty's pen, there's almost a dividing line right there just west of the Mississippi River where, nope, the federal government pretty much owns all of the land in these states, or at least enough to be, you know, impactful to the states. So we need to get away from having our federal delegation making these little side arguments and going on these side missions and just say, hey, Wyoming wants that land. Not wants that land back. We never had it. But the Rock Springs, what is it? Land management, land use, whatever,
resource
RMP
plan
proved. Yeah, gave us the numbers of the monetary value of those lands if they are not used. So the argument of Wyoming can't afford to manage these lands has been dispelled by the federal government itself. We know the value of these lands if we do nothing with them, which is enough to operate them. But if we start to do exploration, tourism, and the state can benefit from, you know, the things above and beyond doing nothing, I don't think there's an argument if we can't afford to manage these lands anymore. So I would really like to see our DC delegation pushing that narrative as opposed to, here's how we're going to make it kind of a little better by making it worse.
Well, and the other thing too is maybe our federal delegation could work on some things that are actually hurting. And I'm not saying that the federal government controlling Wyoming lands isn't hurting Wyoming citizens. It absolutely is. But in my opinion, there's some more pressing matters that maybe they need to pay attention to. I don't know, like illegal immigration, election integrity. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that we could be focusing on that are much more pressing than, you know, opening up wilderness areas for oil and gas development. And, you know, we can have that argument as to whether or not these lands need to be accessible to oil and gas companies. You know, the wilderness areas that I'm envisioning, it would be very difficult to get a drilling rig in there and very expensive to do it. And those are the areas, so that 130,000 or 150,000 acres or whatever it is, you know, we can have that argument later. Why don't we get back to focusing on things that are more pressing, illegal immigration, for example, being one of them. I get reports all of the time, Joey, that there are illegal immigrants in this community or that community. And I mean, it's, I have no evidence. I have no pictures of, you know, a bunch of, you know, immigrant looking people getting off of buses with brown envelopes. But there are more pressing issues that we need to be focusing on. And, you know, I'll exempt Harriet from a lot of this because she is doing a lot of work with the committees that she's on. But those other two jokers, come on, let's get to work on things that really matter and stop worrying about stuff that is kind of secondary. My opinion on it.
Immigrant looking people?
I don't know.
Who the hell are you, man?
But I mean, honestly, Joey, you've got to see these texts I get. There's a whole bunch of Hispanic people getting off a bus. Well, that doesn't mean that they're illegal immigrants. It just means that they're a
profiler.
I mean, come on. And some of the messages I get are absolutely ridiculous. Pictures of just a bus. Okay, well, that's great. It's a bus. No, that doesn't mean that the folks that are on it are illegal. It doesn't prove anything. And I mean, there's a lot of things that we need to be focused on. So yeah, I guess maybe I am profiling a little bit.
Yeah, well, you're regurgitating the information you have to sift through. All the evidence I need that it's actually happening is when Governor Gordon was stopped in the hallway and told, "Hey, we've got this issue. We had this bus full of people that came off with, you know, brown bags that all had the same, you know, look to them, not the people, the items. And we have pretty good evidence that there's illegal immigrants being dumped off over here in this county." And Governor Gordon said, "Okay, yeah, got it. I'm all over it. We're dealing with it," and walked away before he got any information of where it actually was and what was actually going on. So yeah, the immediate dismissal and lack of, interest or even curiosity by the governor when he says, "Oh yeah, we're working on it." You don't know what we're talking about. You haven't gotten any of the details. So I think the governor's fully aware. And, you know, as soon as I have evidence that he's being quiet or covering something up, you know, I'm going to be all over it. But for now, you're right. All we have is, you know, reports of buses of people getting in or out of certain places. And we have to remember Wyoming is a huge tourism state. So I don't think we're being invaded by the Chinese. I think we have a lot of Southeast Asian tourists that come through on buses coming out of Salt Lake City and Omaha, Nebraska. But yeah, we need to focus on making sure that Wyoming has access to and eventually ownership of that 48% of federal lands, especially across the checkerboard. It's such a pain in the butt to be dealing with state property, private property, federal property, on, off, on, off, on, off. That's where you get your corner crossing issues. So yeah, we'll deal with that. Hopefully get some good resolution on it in the near future. Oh, we got a little bit of time left. You got anything else on your list there?
Well, I'm looking through the news here, and it's, it's a normal Thursday. You know, they usually don't dump the news until, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, around that time. And actually, it's a pretty light news day. There is one thing that we could talk about at the Supreme Court. They're set to hear arguments as to whether or not the president has immunity from prosecution. Now, that's an important issue, even though it seems kind of removed from Wyoming. If the president doesn't have immunity from prosecution, and I talked about this on the live program, I think day before yesterday, there's no way that the president can act independently. If the president of the United States has to worry about being prosecuted for what they do in office, there's no way that they can make an unbiased decision. Oh, if I decide this one way against invading a country, well, I might be prosecuted. But if I invade the country, I might be prosecuted. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So the Supreme Court is set to hear arguments that former President Trump has immunity from prosecution for the January 6th riot at the Capitol. Now, first of all, President Trump was very clear that he wanted it to be a peaceful protest. Somewhere I've got the soundbite. I know that you're going to walk over there to peacefully and patriotically let your voices be heard. Okay, so he was very clear on that. He didn't incite a riot, even though a riot happened. But there's a larger question of whether or not the president can be prosecuted for really anything, because anything the president does is pretty much within the scope of his duties, even down to the more mundane things. So big question at the Supreme Court, and I really think that it's one that everybody needs to pay attention to. Just for the simple reason that if the president can be prosecuted for mundane and meaningless things, that means you can be prosecuted for anything. I mean, none of us are the president, and none of us have any of the protections that the Office of the Presidency does. We could be prosecuted for a whole bunch of stuff. Unless, of course, you're a Sheridan County Commissioner, in which case you can do whatever you want and not be prosecuted for it, or at least not be punished.
Well, it's not that you don't get prosecuted, it's that you get to go to Mexico while they're preparing their half-assed prosecution of you. But that's a different story. It's official acts of the president, even the mundane. There's some personal things that I don't think would be covered any way, shape, or form of a president doing certain things as an individual citizen, even if they were president at the time. But there's a couple things here. One, the entire January 6th argument is based on a public statement, which is an official act of the president, and tweets, which nowadays I would say internet communication, social media communication is another official statement of the president. It just, you know, what's the difference between, you know, FDR doing his fireside chats over the radio and President Trump doing it over Twitter? They're putting information out to the people from the office of the president. I think that's all protected under the First Amendment. And there is no evidence in there that, you know, Trump incited this riot or called for the insurrection, any of the things he's been accused of. So that's just going to have to lie where it lies. I believe when he gave those speeches and made those tweets, it was an official act of the office. So six in one hand, half dozen in the other there. I don't think it's going to be actionable. Hopefully the Supreme Court rules the right way on that. But if they don't, the Democrats, the liberals, and the anti-Trumpers have to be wary of what they're asking for here. Because if they get a Supreme Court decision that says, nope, presidents can be prosecuted for anything they do in office, regardless of the impacts of what you just talked about, making it almost impossible to act as president while you're president, as soon as Joe Biden is voted out of office, you know he's going to trial for a bunch of crimes, regardless of whether he was president or not. So this is an argument I have a lot of the time. If it's a properly, it's a fundamental principle properly and equally applied in all situations, it should be fine. But if you're rigging something to address a specific person or a specific issue, it can very easily and quickly be turned against you. And so if the Supreme Court goes the other way on this one, which I don't see them doing, I don't know, we'll have to see, but that can very quickly turn into the criminal trial of Uncle Joe Biden there. And I'm not saying that's something I want to see happen, but if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. And I think there's plenty of crimes that the Biden and the Biden family have committed before he was president that are worthy of prosecution. So the presidential immunity only applies to the time you were in office and official acts. And I still think we can handily deal with Joe Biden without that. So, yeah, I don't see it going one way. I don't see it going that way, that the Supreme Court will say, no, you don't have any presidential immunity. And we're just going to have to wait and see. But yeah, that sword cuts both ways.
So another thing that, you know, a small piece of news is that it would appear that Senator Bonehead has got the Senate Republican Political Action Committee fined $5,000 by the IRS. Another article in the Cowpie, and let me just read you the first couple paragraphs here. And I quote, a political action committee supporting Wyoming State Senate Republicans has been hit with a $5,000 fine from the IRS. State Senator Brian Bonehead Boner, chairman of the Wyoming State Senate Republican Conference Political Action Committee, confirmed to the Cowpie on Wednesday that his organization was recently fined by the federal agency. Quote, I am disappointed that I made that mistake, but I owned up to it with the conference and made sure that I've backfilled the cash that we had to pay for the fine with my personal campaign funds to ensure there's no disruption to the PAC itself. Boner said that the fine came as a result of the group making a technical mistake when filing its taxes that made the IRS believe it had been concealing itself as a 501c4 nonprofit. Boner said his group had been exploring the possibility of claiming this status, but no longer is. According to the IRS, to be tax exempt as a social welfare organization, which is a 501c4, an organization must not be organized for profit and must be operated exclusively to promote social welfare. Political finance website Open Secrets reports that in 1959, the IRS clarified that 501c4 groups can participate in some political activity so long as their politics isn't their primary purpose. So apparently, Bonehead and the Republicans in the Senate, or at least their political action committee, tried to conceal their donors and then decided that wasn't a good idea, but still filed their tax under, or, you know, making a technical mistake along those lines. And now they got a $5,000 hit from the IRS, which, interestingly enough, that Brian Bonehead Boner has $5,000 sitting around in what he calls personal campaign funds is kind of amazing. Then that he was actually able to just move money around. And if you read further down in the article, it points out that the IRS is probably going to refund this $5,000 anyway, as it was just a quote-unquote technical mistake. But I think the real issue here is, why is the Senate Republican PAC trying to pass itself off as a social welfare organization and conceal its donors with a 501c4 corporation?
I couldn't tell you. All I know is that in very bold letters, it says on the IRS tax statement, and when you're applying for that not-for-profit status, what you can and can't do and what you can and can't be. And one of the very clear ones on many of them is your primary activity cannot be political. And I'm sorry that I'm not sorry, but the Political Action Committee for the Senate Republicans in Wyoming is obviously politically based. So I don't see this as just an accident. I think it was an attempt to sail something through. I don't have any evidence of it. But even then, it's such an egregious error, if it was an accident, that you have to wonder, you know, how many of these Brian Boner type people can we really trust with things like, oh, I don't know, our state budget, writing our laws? How many accidents have gone on in other places? Now, you mentioned the senator had $5,000 sitting around in their campaign account. I don't think that that is terribly odd. They do tend to collect more money than they spend a lot of times, especially if they're an incumbent. We've had this problem with the Republican Party giving money to candidates and saying, wait a minute, we gave you $3,000. And when you were done losing your race, you had $8,000 in your campaign fund. How about kicking a check back? So no, it's what they call a war chest. I see how that happens. They even have off-year, non-election year filings that they have to do in YCFIS to show all the money that they have had donated to their campaign, even when they're not running for office. So I could see how he could have that. My problem is that he took it out of his campaign fund. You know, people donate to political campaigns to help get you elected, not to cover your ass when you screw up with the IRS. So now those donors to Brian Boner's campaign are $5,000 short on their intent of getting him reelected. That has shifted over to the Senate Republicans PAC, which may give money to that $5,000 to candidates they don't support. So I think he should have, again, hey, if you took responsibility, open your personal checking account, put that money back in there. And I really need to look into this Senate Republicans PAC, because I've never really heard of it before. I knew it existed, but I wonder who not only their donors are, but who did they decide gets the money? Because there are these perceived divisions in the genteel traditions of the Senate and all that good stuff. And I'm wondering if they're leaning one way or another with who they support. And this year will be another telling factor in that. Who do they give money to this year, as opposed to just saying, our goal is to get Republicans elected or reelected, which everybody uses as their tagline. But there's got to be some kind of format, some kind of rubric for how they apply those funds to candidates. So I'll be keeping an eye out on that, but can't be surprised. Boner boneheads it again.
Well, my point was not that politicians have extra money in their war chest. I mean, that's that pretty much makes sense to me. You may not spend all of the campaign money that you have. My point was that Bonehead himself has $5,000 in campaign donations. No, you know, actually, Brian Boner is another one of these establishment Republicans. Sometimes he sides with the conservatives, but when it comes down to big issues, the guy needs to get on Amazon and order a spine, because a lot of times he ends up voting with the establishment on a whole bunch of critical issues. And, you know, as far as I know, the Senate re-election, political action committee, whatever it is, they've never really been all that active. When you look through YCFIS, you'll see some smaller donations to different senators. But as far as being like super active, I haven't seen that. But now one interesting point, though, and I still want to go back to this, is why does the Senate, well, let's get the actual name of it, the State Senate Republican Political Action Committee, why were they attempting to conceal their donors? Because that's the big difference between a 501c4 and a 501c3, or just your run-of-the-mill political action committee. A 501c4 doesn't have to disclose their donors. This is the exact problem that Wyoming gun owners ran into. They ended up getting fined by the Secretary of State and sued the state, and they ended up winning that lawsuit, saying that they don't have to identify their donors, which they're a 501c4, so they don't have to. So again, why is the State Senate Republican Political Action Committee trying to conceal their donors? And the little nugget in that article is, well, we were exploring this for some time, but we're no longer pursuing it. So who is donating to that political action committee that they want to conceal? I mean, that's the question there, in my mind anyway.
Nope. And since they're not protected and their donors have to be listed, I guess we'll just have to get into YCFIS. Interesting commentary you made on Brian Boehner's voting. Historically, yes, it's been very concerning. This year in the Senate, and remember, I watched the whole Senate, he made a lot of very conservative votes and arguments on the floor for a lot of things. But of course, he's up for re-election this year, so that's not terribly surprising. And we'll have to keep an eye on that. If you're on the east side of Natrona County or anywhere in Converse County, I believe, that's going to be on your ballot. So take a look and continue to listen to the Independence Network, and we'll bring you updates on what's really going on in that district and who the candidates are. But again, you know, the voting record, you have to go back further than this past year, because they knew that this was an election year. And I was kind of surprised at some of the votes we got out of Brian Boehner, and I don't know that that would continue if he was reelected. We'd have 3 years of the usual until he's up for reelection again.
Well, that's a good point, Joey. So a lot of these senators, you get one good year out of four, and it always happens to be the election year that they're actually voting the way that they told their constituents they're going to vote. You know, I was a guest speaker at an event in Carbon County, or in not in Carbon County, in Converse County, too many C's. And, you know, that year, it was, I think it was like 2.5 years ago, something like that. That year, Bonehead's voting record was pretty terrible. So very similar to what we experience with a lot of these senators. Dave Kinski, for example, you get one good year out of four. This year, Dave Kinski was fantastic in the Senate. It's too bad. Maybe he wanted to go out on a high note. I don't know. But a lot of these folks, they don't end up being conservatives until the session right before their reelection campaign. So, you know, yay that we get one good year out of four, but I'd rather have four out of four. And, you know, I've never been a real big fan of Bonehead. So we'll just have to keep watching what he does with those campaign funds that he's got stashed away.
Yeah, and another interesting quote, I'm reading down towards the bottom of this article from Senator Boehner. Quote, "I think our conflict is within primarily two members of our leadership team, and I look forward to moving past that dynamic. What happened last session is unfortunate, but it's easily fixable if we just move past the personalities involved in that conflict." So I'm going to assume if he's saying two members of our leadership, he's talking about Senator Dave Kinski and Senator Larry Hicks and putting it all at their feet. But again, go back and look at the voting record. Any of the controversial motions or amendments that were put on the floor, or actions like overturning the chair, overturning the rules committee, or bringing a bill out of another committee that killed it to the floor, are all things that Brian Boehner voted in support of. So leadership is leadership. They only lead. They don't control your vote. So if you're complaining that it's these two guys, then why did you vote in favor of their motions, requests, demands, whatever, so often, Brian? It's again another example of hypocrisy, and we're gonna have to keep an eye on that one. So it looks like we're coming up on the end of the hour here. I have had a ton of requests to replay Harriet Hageman's visit to Rollins from yesterday's show. So that's what I'll be doing at 11 o'clock. What do you got for Cowboy State politics today, David?
Well, it's all going to be national news. I'm going to talk about Trump and the Supreme Court and his trial. And I've got a whole bunch of stuff left in the stack of stuff. One interesting yet completely unsurprising article is that Paul Ryan is kind of in the tank with the Democrats. A big shocker there. We'll have to get in the Wayback Machine and talk about Paul Ryan. Let's see here. There's Christopher Wray. He says that they've never monitored protests. That's not something they do. So we'll cover all of that on Cowboy State Politics today. We burned through another hour of the morning show. Keep it tuned to the Independence Network. Just keep it playing in the background. You'll get way more information than you will anywhere else. But for now, we'll see you tomorrow. Are you tired of the Pravda on the Platte, the cow pie, the Wyoming turkey vulture? Perhaps you should try something new, like the Independence Network.